Turn back to Psalms 106 for a morning lesson this morning. Praise ye the Lord. Oh, give thanks unto the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endureth forever. Who can utter the mighty acts of the Lord, and who can show forth all his praise? Blessed are they that keep judgment, and he that doeth righteousness at all times. Remember me, O Lord, with the favor that thou bearest unto thy people. O visit me with thy salvation, that I may see the good of thy chosen, that I may rejoice in the gladness of thy nation, that I may glory with thine inheritance. We have sinned with our fathers, we have committed iniquity, we have done wickedly. Our fathers understood not thy wonders in Egypt. They remember not the multitude of thy mercies, but provoked him at the sea, even at the Red Sea. Nevertheless, he saved them for his name's sake, that he might make his mighty power to be known. He rebuked the Red Sea also, and it was dried up, so he led them through the depths as through the wilderness. And he saved them from the hand of him that hated them, and redeemed them from the hand of the enemy. And the waters covered their enemies, and there was not one of them left. Then believed they his words, and they sang his praise. They soon forgot his works. They waited not for his counsel, but lusted exceedingly in the wilderness, and tempted God in the desert. And he gave them their request, but sent leanness into their soul. They envied Moses also in the camp, and Aaron, the saint of the Lord. The earth opened and swallowed up Dathan and covered the company of Abiram. And a fire was kindled in their company. The flame burned up the wicked. They made a calf in Horeb and worshiped the molten image. Thus they changed their glory into the similitude of an ox that eateth grass. They forgot God, their Savior, which had done great things in Egypt, wondrous works in the land of Ham, and terrible things by the Red Sea. Therefore he said that he would destroy them. Had not Moses, his chosen, stood before him in the breach to turn away his wrath, lest he should destroy them. I'm going to stop there. Psalms 106, 1 through 23.
Let's open the precious word of God to Mark 4. Start reading at the 35th verse. Mark 4, 35. And the same day, when the even was come, he saith unto them, Let us pass over unto the other side. And when they had sent away the multitude, they took him, even as he was in the ship. And there was also with him other little ships. And there arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat into the ship, so that it was now full. And he was in the hinder part of the ship, asleep on a pillow. And they awake him, and say unto him, Master, carest thou not that we perish? And he arose, and rebuked the wind, and said unto the sea, Peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said unto them, Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared exceedingly, and said one to another, What manner of man is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him? And they came over unto the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gadarenes. And when he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no man could bind him, no, not with chains, because that he had often been bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces. Neither could any man tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. But when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshipped him, and cried with a loud voice, and said, What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God? I adjure thee by God that thou torment me not. For he said unto him, Come out of the man, thou unclean spirit. And he asked him, What is thy name? And he answered, saying, My name is Legion, for we are many. And he besought him that he would not send him away out of the country. Now there was nigh unto the mountains a great herd of fine swine feeding. And all the devils besought him, saying, Send us into the swine, that we may enter into them. And forthwith Jesus gave them leave. And the unclean spirits went out and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea. They were about 2,000, and were choked in the sea. And they that fed the swine fled, and told it in the city and in the country. And they went out to see what it was that was done. And they come to Jesus, and see him that was possessed with the devil, and had the legion sitting and clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And they that saw it told them how it befell to him that was possessed with the devil, and also concerning the swine. And they began to pray him to depart out of their coasts. And when he was come into the ship, he that had been possessed with the devil prayed him that he might be with him. Howbeit, Jesus suffered him not, but saith unto him, Go home to thy friends, and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee, and hath had compassion on thee. And he departed and began to publish in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him, and all men did marvel. And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come, and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. And a certain woman which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse, when she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, If I may but touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. Then straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, Who touched my clothes? And his disciples said unto him, Thou seest the multitude that thronging thee, and sayest thou, Who touched me? And he looked round about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace, and be whole of thy plague. While he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, Thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further? As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, Be not afraid, only believe. And he suffered no man to follow him, save Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue in tumult, and them that wept and wailed greatly. And when he was come in, he saith unto them, Why make ye this ado and weep? The damsel is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them all out, he taketh the father and the mother of the damsel, and them that were with him, and entereth in where the damsel was lying. And he took the damsel by the hand, and said unto her, Talitha kumi, which is being interpreted, Damsel, I say unto thee, arise. And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was at age of 12 years, and they were astonished with great astonishment. And he charged them straightly that no man should know it. And he commanded that something should be given her to eat.
Greetings. In the very precious name of the one that is risen from the dead. I like to think about this story, and I've certainly told it before, and I'm sure you've heard it. But at times like this, I like to think about it again. It was back in the Soviet Union. They sent a man from Moscow out to a small village. As they heard they weren't in a communist way. And they sent a man out that was extremely articulate. And he gathered all the village in center square there, and he began to talk to them about how atheism and how God is dead and how it's the science is here to solve the problems. And he was there today to convince them and prove to them that there is no God. And he talked for an hour or more, very articulately, with many, many proofs in his mind of this. And at the end, he simply said, "Is there any questions?" It was silent. And then the village priest, the old man, got up as if he had a question to ask. And in their tradition, he simply turned around and he said, "He is risen." And in their culture, they replied back to him with a thunderous voice, "He is risen indeed." And the arguments of the last hour were flat, and they were gone, destroyed by the one who's alive, by the proof of the empty tomb. So we reflect on that, and we've heard already, by the one that our brother told us about this morning that sets, and he's in his resurrected, glorified state. That one, the name we are so honored to greet you in this morning. Appreciate the opening, and we have some thoughts we'll get to shortly that were prompted. This morning we have a message here out of Mark. Mark is a gospel that I've been studying recently, and I've grown to appreciate it. It's a gospel, personally, I don't know how you are, I've always overlooked it. It's the shortest one, has the least words, I believe, of any. And I don't know, it's just quick and abrupt, and I don't know, I find myself in Matthew or John, especially John, probably a favorite of mine, and feel prompted to go there. And I've really grown to love Mark. It's just interesting. It's written to the Gentiles, and I don't think I'm going to say much about what Mark's about, but I just encourage you, if you haven't, if you're like me, like I was, to spend some time in the book of Mark. It's a fascinating gospel if you become to understand it. But I do want to tell you, you know, we're kind of here in the middle of Jesus' ministry here when we break in chapter 4. Four before verses 33, you'll notice, is just about all red letters. It's what Jesus was here to say and to teach. And then there in 33 or so, there's a break. And through the fifth chapter, you won't see a lot of red letters. It's going to be what Jesus does. And it's so fascinating to me the way he does. And you know, in the very beginning of Mark, Mark 1, chapter, verse 1 in the first chapter, he simply says, and I believe this to be true. It's kind of hard to study it out and prove it, but I believe this to be true. It says, it's the only time the writer Mark gives his opinion, his thoughts, really, about Jesus. It's a very short verse. It says, "The beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God." He makes that statement. And then he goes on the rest of his book, and he just lays out the evidence of what Jesus said and what Jesus did, and he lets you draw your own conclusions. And today we're going to focus a lot on what he did. And it's inspiring to me as we think about that. So before we go any further, I'd like to sing hymn number 70. And I think you know the song well, hymn number 70. It's "Heaven Begun on Earth." It says, "Come ye that love the Lord, and let your joys be known. Join in a song with sweet accord while ye surround his throne." And I'll just line it through. It says, "The God that rules on high, that all the earth surveys, that rides upon the stormy sky and calms the roaring seas. This awful God is ours, that one that stands there in his glorified state, that we will fall on our faces before, As our brother told us this morning, our Father and our love. He will send down His heavenly power to carry us above. The men of grace have found glory begun below. Celestial fruits on earthly ground from faith and hope may grow. Then let our songs abound and every tear be dry. We're marching on Emmanuel's ground to fairer worlds on high. I think before we go into Mark a little bit, I'd like to go back to Psalms 106. Just, you don't have to turn back there. Read that chapter. It's kind of interesting. Just thinking really back to the opening a little. Our faith is affected by a lot of things. And it may be kind of odd, but I think food is one of those things that affect it. I think our faith is affected by our fellowship, by our family and our friends. All four of those words start with S. And if you think about that, I think there's a lot of truth in that. We are impacted by those we're surrounded with. And you've seen that in Psalms 106 as we read through that. Chapter reminded me, we were in a family reunion, I think it was August, kind of losing track, or 1st of September maybe, and it was in northern Missouri. I don't know how many of you have ever been there. I highly recommend it. It's a beautiful part of the state. But as we got close to the place where we were going, the roads there are narrow, they were paved, but they're just hills. There was no flat. It was up and it was down. It was up and it was down. And I don't know how you felt, but reading Psalms 106 this morning just felt like that. It hit a high point, and then they soon forgot, and they were back down. And then it brought up that instance there where they lusted for meat in the wilderness, thinking about how food can affect our faith. And you know, when someone's hungry, it's hard to have faith. If someone's truly starving, I don't know how many here have ever experienced that. I certainly haven't. But those that work among it, and maybe Garrett and Gina could tell us more of that than I could, that it's pretty hard to think about anything else if you can't have anything to eat. And so it's maybe easy to judge them, but they had the manna of God, the bread of heaven, and yet they started lusting for meat. And you know, Psalms 106 says God gave them the request, but He sent leanness into their soul. Better to be a little lean for hunger than it is to be lean in the soul. But nonetheless, this Moses, he calls him out in 106. It's just this Moses, as he encountered there with God. Turn back to 11, if you will, here briefly. It's such amazing. He had stretched out the staff. The Red Sea had parted. They'd went through as if it was a wilderness. Yeah, I think that's easy to overlook. It wasn't damp sand they walked through on. It was dry, dusty ground that a sea had been on a little bit sooner than that. I mean, and Moses had done that. I mean, he's the one that carried around the staff. And I don't know how you children are, but if I carried around a staff that if you threw it down, it turned into a snake, that'd make me a little jumpy how I put it up at night. I'd make sure it's secured pretty good. I don't really like snakes that well. Not at all. But nonetheless, he had taken that and it had turned into a snake and he'd picked it back up and it's back into a staff. This Moses. And yet, when they started lusting for meat and he brought it to God here in this chapter, God tells them that He's going to give them meat. I think we'll break in here about the 18th verse. And shall thou, and say thou unto the people, sanctify yourself against tomorrow. And ye shall eat flesh, for ye have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, who shall give us flesh to eat? For it was well with us in Egypt. Don't look back to Egypt. Therefore, the Lord will give you flesh, and ye shall eat. And this is God speaking. He says, ye shall not eat one day nor 2 days. And I don't know. This just, I just love this, the God that speaks like this. Nor 5 days, neither 10 days, nor 20 days, but even a whole month until it comes out at your nostrils. and it be loathsome to you, because that ye have despised the Lord which is among you, and have wept before him, saying, why came we forth out of Egypt? And then this Moses, I don't know that you could say it's a lack of faith, but he had questions about this. He really did. He said, God, where are you going to get meat, in my words, to feed these people? There's 600,000 footmen. And that's beside women and children, maybe 1.5 million, maybe 2 million people. Where are you going to get the meat? He says, are you going to slaughter all our herds to feed these people? Is that what you're going to do, God? Or are you going to go out into the sea and take all the fish of the sea? Just a question. And I know you can relate to that. And I can relate to that. God, yeah, but how? How is that possible? And God had some words back for Moses, and we can learn from them. In the 23rd verse, and the Lord said unto Moses, is the Lord's hand waxed short? In spite of everything we're going through today, is the Lord's hand waxed short? In spite of everything you've got facing you, ask this question. Is the Lord's hand waxed short? Keep that in your heart. It's been burning in my heart now for several weeks. Is the Lord's hand waxed short? That's what God wanted to know. Thou shalt see now whether my word shall come to pass unto thee or not. So Moses went out and told the people, get ready. Moses' questions were over. He knew the Lord's hand had not waxed short. This Moses that had questions. In Psalms 106, 23, verse 23 is what it said. I have chosen this Moses to stand in the breach for you. And you know what Moses said? He says, there's one that cometh after me that's like unto me, but he's greater than me, a prophet. I'll find it here. Well, I thought I wrote it down, but there's one like me coming. You know it's in Deuteronomy. I can't think of the reference right off the top of my head. Thank you. Say it again. Chapter 18. There's one like unto me coming. See, Moses was just a type of this one that is coming. This one who is able to stand in the breach. Let's look. Ezekiel 13:5 says that it just saying to the people there, he says, ye have not gone up into the gaps, neither made up the hedge for the house of Israel to stand in the battle of the day of the Lord. And then he goes on in chapter 22, verse 30, he says, and I sought for a man among them that should make up the hedge and stand in the gap before me for the land, that I should not destroy it, but I found none. But there is one. So God had to have an own plan, his own plan. And he had a servant who came, who is able and willing to stand in the breach. Yeah, what I was looking for is here, Deuteronomy 18:15. The Lord thy God will raise up unto thee a prophet from the midst of thee of thy brethren, like unto me, unto him ye shall hearken. Jesus. Jesus. Who gave out the call to come and dine. The one that is the fulfillment of everything God put before us. Who is offering to us, as we heard this morning, the opportunity one more moment to come and dine. Why? Why would anyone not accept that? Oh, it's easy to ask standing here, but it's hard before. I didn't remember. I know so many things get in our way of just coming and dining at the Master's table that he has prepared like he did in the wilderness, and he's still able to do it today. Praise his name. Only Jesus can stand in the breaches in our life. As a newly married man, I got intrigued by a book on spiritual warfare, and I read it. Someone that had been rescued out of witchcraft, if I remember correctly, and And she was kind of teaching on how to fight the powers of darkness. And I got intrigued with that. And a big thing they had is that, you know, pray that you could stand in the gap for people. And I finished that book kind of inspired. And that night there was a couple on my mind that we knew that had not made a commitment to Christ publicly anyway. And so I prayed that I could stand in the gap for them. And that night I learned a lesson. I've never had, I guess you'd call it a nightmare like it. But I've seen something come out of those two people. I've seen them in a vision or a dream. And they came out and they came after me with a sword. And I bailed. I wasn't able to stand in the gap for them people. And I'm excited to share that with you, that very humbling story, because I'm not able to stand in the gap for you, and you're not able to stand in the gap for me or your brother, your sister, but there is one today who is able. He is able. And that's the message today of the one who is able. Here in Mark, if we turn back there, we have four different accounts that we want to go through fairly briefly, each one. We're going to see four different categories in these groups. In each one, you're going to read and you're going to see where man is absolutely helpless. He has nothing left to give. And in each case, you'll find Jesus acts. He does. And you'll find it wasn't hard for him. It was effortless in each case. And then you're going to see man's reaction to him because they see he's God. And they're going to see, you're going to see in each case, man reacts in fear and awe and amazement. He is able to conquer in all areas we cannot. Look for these four. And each one of these, I believe, start with the letter D. Each one of these categories, as we'll go through them, or we've crafted it to be that way. Hopefully, we haven't taken it too out of context. D. And, you know, I think back to school, and you kids can relate to this. If you bring a report card home and you have some D's on it, That's not a fun day, is it? You know, D isn't technically failing, or failed, I should say. You haven't failed with a D. You're not going to have to repeat the course, but it's really close. You're in danger. And you know, maybe after first quarter, if you have a D, you can turn it around and maybe you can still get an A. But by second quarter, the chances are pretty slim without a lot of extra work. And by third quarter, it's hopeless. But today we're going to see the one who is able to turn the D's into A's. And so you look for that, children, as we go through this, these situations. Christ is able. So here in the first one in chapter 4, starting at the 35th verse, same day that Jesus finished speaking, they headed out across the Sea of Galilee. And you know the story. A storm came up suddenly. But as I was thinking about this, I don't think I'd really thought about it for, to think about who was in the boat. Or the ship, if you want to call it. These disciples, at least for sure four of them, if I remember correctly, were fishermen, professional fishermen, and they fished from boats and made a living on it. These were not novice boaters. They were sailors. And I'm sure they'd been in many storms before. This wasn't the first one by any chance. Peter, James, and John. And, you know, it's interesting. This storm came up, and if you read that and you'll look, you'll notice the boat was full. And when you're in the midst of a storm, even today, and your boat is full of water, and the waves are crashing and the wind is blowing, you're in danger of going down. Nothing's changed in that regard. Isn't it amazing that Jesus was asleep? But look at that, and I want to read it. When they woke him up, notice they didn't say, "Jesus, save us." They went to him and in frustration, I would say, or the word we'd like to use is despair. They went to him in despair and they said, "Master, carest thou not that we perish? Do you not care that we're perished?" They were professional sailors. They knew that no man could save them. They were doomed. They weren't scared. I don't get that. They were working. They were going after it. They were men. They were in the middle of the battle, but they were just frustrated. They were in despair. And they said, "Don't you even care that we perish? Are you just going to sleep through our doom?" Oh, we're doomed. We know that. It's helpless. It's hopeless. And that's just how it feels when we're in despair, doesn't it? And then, you know, he simply rose up and said, "Shh." In essence, this peace, be still. And the waves grew quiet instantly. You might think that's just a little boat in the Sea of Galilee, and I don't know what the size was. But you know, like I said, boats still go down today. In fact, it just happened this year. If you remember Mike Lynch's boat, he's a billionaire. That boat, interesting, the Bayesian, was a $40 million boat, 184 foot long. I mean, that's 2/3 of a football field almost. Long yacht. Designer said is unthinkable. And you know, just a small violent storm came up while it was at anchor. And that thing sank in under a minute. That's the power of the storm. And brothers and sisters, when despair hits us, it can sink us so quick. Do we call out to the one that's able? The one who is able to turn our despair into an A. It's interesting, after he stilled it, he just asked a couple questions. "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" Maybe sometimes when we're in despair, someone needs to ask us that. This world is full of despair all around us and among us. I think everyone deals with it at some point. If you haven't, you probably will. Why are we so fearful? How is it that we have no faith? Those questions still ring true. We must call out to him. And then their reaction, as you can see it there, they weren't scared during the storm. But when they seen this man, Jesus, effortlessly quieted, then they were fearful and amazed. And they said, "What manner?" It says they feared exceedingly and said one to another, "What manner, what type of man is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" They feared him. They held him in his right place. They were in awe of this one that could still the winds and the waves. just like to reflect a little bit as we get through each account. We're going through it quick. Just pause. A few things. You know, if you look through Mark and you study it, you'll notice he has a special interest in clothes. And you can kind of look in each one of these. Clothes doesn't play a factor really in all of them. And it really doesn't here, but it's just interesting to me. And I don't know what you see, but I see Jesus asleep on a pillow. And the God of all creation asleep in the storm. I just love that picture. There's not a slight bit of anxiety. It doesn't take much of anything for me to mess up my sleep. It can be noises. It can be anxiety. It can be just your brain going too fast. But no, he's asleep in the storm. And then, you know, on a pillow. He's God, but he's here. He's a man. He's in the flesh. Just a little comfort from a pillow. Isn't that interesting? He wasn't on a hard bench, but he had a pillow. He was asleep. How well he could know us as we need our comforts and different things. We've already covered, I think, the rest of it good enough. We don't follow our notes very good in order, but that's all right. But the other thing I wanted to point out in each one of these cases, they didn't happen in a vacuum. In this case, there was witnesses, and you think, well, yeah, there's those in the boat with him. But if you'll go back, I believe it's in the 36th verse, and there were also with him other little ships. Now, I don't know if they were all together right in the storm, but they probably all experienced the storm, and they all experienced the great calm. And could you imagine if they got back to shore and they said, what just happened? We thought we were going down, and suddenly it just stopped. And they said, yeah, this man, I don't know what he is, but he just said, shush, and it stopped. We couldn't believe it. That's what Mark gives us over and over again, what Jesus says and what he does and who saw it and who witnessed it. It wasn't just one or two. It was many, many. So do we awake him aware of our doom and despair, or to call out for help? What is your reaction in the storm? And what is your reaction in the great calm? Things to think about. Well, I think we'll go on to the next one, is Christ is able when confronted by demons or devils. In the first chapter, the same trip, the way I see it, and they came over the side of the sea into the country of the Gadarenes. Mark isn't necessarily linear in all places. It is written with a purpose, and so things can be grouped. So I believe, though, this is a linear portion. I don't know if I could prove that or not, but it kind of seems to make sense with the way it reads. And it's interesting, when they came out of this ship here, well, I'll just tell you about the Gadarenes a little bit. It's an area that is on the other side of the Sea of Galilee from Galilee area, towards the southeast end of the Sea of Galilee and beyond it. There was 10 cities there that were that had went Greek early on. They had become, all the words escaping me, if that's all right, but they had embraced the Greek lifestyle and early and became very supportive of that. And that's why you'll see swine there. They were raising swine probably for the Romans, who loved their pigs and their pork. Anyway, these lands had turned away from God and the people of God. So it's really an unclean land that he went into when he landed there on the east side. Just look at this man as he came out to meet Jesus. This poor man living in the midst of an unclean land and an unclean people, just cut off. He was lived in tombs, and you know, I don't think for time we'll go there. Numbers 19 talks about how someone even touches a dead body, they're unclean for 7 days and they have to do certain things. And this man was dwelling in the tomb. So in every way, in every situation, he was unclean. He was cut off. He was cast out. Men had tried to to work with him in the way men still work with people that we might say have mental illness or whatever. They try to restrain them, and now we drug them and they put them in. And I'm not here to, don't take, that kind of came out like I'd be critical of, oh, we drug them. Not at all. I had some experience with that very close to us. And there's times I'm in full support of that. God's will has to determine that. But nonetheless, they had done the best they could for this man. They had tried to bind him, but they couldn't keep him bound. He'd just break free. And he was cutting himself and crying in the tombs day and night and just screaming out. And I wonder, why would he cut himself? Was it to kill himself, to set himself free, or was it to try to kill the demons that were hindering him so much? What was it? I don't know. I heard one man say that of all the men, with the possible exception of Job, this was the most miserable man in the Bible. I thought that was interesting to think about. This poor man. You know, that I see someone like that. It comes to mind. I actually did see someone like that, I think. On the way down here, we stopped for a quick bite to eat out at just right there in Sacramento at a McDonald's. And as I was standing there ordering, a lady came in a wheelchair and absolutely went stark, raving nuts. I'd never seen anything like it. Vile mouth, screaming at the top of her lungs about different things. It was kind of amusing and kind of scary. And then, of course, as I got my food, she had went out. No one really talked to her. She just blew up and said she was so mad she was going out, and she did. And as I headed out to my car with my food, I seen her over there by it, and I said, oh, boy. And so I started walking kind of slow and just thought I'd meander a little bit here. But then she rolled around right by the driver's side and was kind of looking in the car, and I thought, well, I don't want her to damage a rental car either. So we headed right on over there then, and I had my food and keys. She was a few feet away, and I was just going to kind of slip in the car and go. But she wanted to know if I had a cigarette for her. And I said, well, no, I've never smoked. And then she said, well, I want to give you some advice. You should carry a lighter for a girl. So she needs a light, and we'll have to do something. She named a pretty horrible act to get one. And it was quite an odd conversation. And then I noticed she actually had a lighter sitting in her lap. And I said, oh, is your lighter not working anymore? And she said, no, it works. And I said, oh, you just need a cigarette. And she says, well, I got a pack here. So, I mean, when your mind is, you know, whether it's demons or whatever, it just doesn't make any sense. And then she was done and she went on and it was fine. But nonetheless, as we encounter these people, they're kind of scary sometimes. And so we tend to lock them up. But this poor, poor man, it's amazing though, in spite of this, in spite of what he had going on, Jesus' ship landed and the man saw him and something within him recognized him, whether it was the demons or not. But I believe with all my heart as I read this, it was the man who ran to Jesus and he fell at his feet and he worshiped him. What keeps us back from worshiping? This man was able to do it. It's like I told you yesterday, the man we have that says he's being oppressed and keeping from worship. No, demons don't have the power to hold us back from worship. They don't. They don't have the power to keep us from Jesus. I believe with all my heart they don't. And this man sure couldn't. If anyone could be held back, it would have been this man. I think it's why we're told about this man. If anyone, it'd be this man. You know, as you think about it, it's interesting. And I don't have time to do that. And Jesus just asked him, what is your name? The name in the Bible means nature. What is the nature? Apparently, he had already spoken a command to them as they begged him not to torment them. This, and they came out and they said, Legion. And I don't know how many that is. A legion at this time in the Roman army was, if I remember right, 5,200 men, 5,200. But in reality, when that word was used, it just meant thousands. It was a generic term, thousands. You know, there's 2,000 swine died. Did each one have a demon or multiple demons, or did they not all have demons? We don't know. 2,000 ran off once he released them. Many demons, more than any one man should ever have to deal with. But it is interesting how, and I do want to say this, the Bible and Mark especially is very clear when Jesus was dealing with demons and when he was dealing with sickness or disease. He makes a clear distinction. Read through that and tell me if I'm wrong on that in anywhere. Sometimes today men seem to mix the two up. Be careful of that. When he called them out, and you notice that there was no effort involved, there was no in special words, the demons just begged him. They knew it wasn't their day yet of judgment. They knew that. They just said, you know, please don't send us to the pit, in my words, but let us go into these swine, and then they run off. And then we find the men of that country probably coming out to check on their swine, wondering what went on. And they find this man clothed and in his right mind. And they were fearful. Isn't that interesting? Verse 15, and they came to Jesus and seen him that was possessed with the devil and had the legion setting and clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And they saw it, told them how it befell them, how that he was possessed of the devil. Proved. And by the way, that possessed there, I think, be careful with that. The devil doesn't possess anyone. And if you read that correctly, I don't think that's what it's saying, but that he was tormented by them. So they were afraid, and then their reaction. They had a prayer there, these men of that country. And I don't know the motivation for it. Maybe no one was afraid more of their goods be wiped out, but they had a prayer that he should leave. And sometimes answered prayers can be a curse, because Jesus answered them and he left. And from what I know, there's no record of him ever going back to that country again. And that's a sad thing, something to think about. Just like when they lusted for meat and God answered but sent leanness into their soul. Be careful of our prayers and what we ask for. So important to pray by the will of Jesus. Again, notice all the witnesses. So many witnesses. The people of the country, the disciples, the man himself, his life was a testimony. Seeing the effects of what had happened. The swine keeper. And then in contrast to the men of that country, the man who had the legion prayed that he could go with Jesus. But Jesus said, no, you go and tell what great things God has done for you. And he did. And it's a bright spot, really, is that he departed and began to publish in the Decapolis how great a thing Jesus had done for him, and all men did marvel. As Christ left, but he did leave a witness, a slight second chance, another chance for the people of that area, a bright spot. And did you notice the clothes in this situation? That he was, when he found him, he was ragged and torn and unclean, but when the legion was gone, they found him clothed and in his right mind. Just interesting. We need to keep going. The time is going fast. That is good. 5:21 through 34, we have an encounter with disease, and Christ is able over disease as well. We have this woman here which had had an issue of blood for 12 years and had suffered many things of many physicians. And had spent all that she had and was nothing bettered, but rather she grew worse. And I was wondering how this would go today. We can relate a little bit with this woman over the last going on 2 years as different health issues have come into our life. And it gets expensive. You go to the doctor and you try this and you try that and you get this test and a CAT scan and this thing happens and that thing happens and then more things. And you can start to see the pattern. No man was able to help this woman. No man. She had it for 12 years. Can you sisters imagine that? You got to understand in a spiritual sense. I mean, to you, it would be horrible. But you would still come to church. You'd still be touched and hugged and saluted. You would still get a help and commune. But not this woman. She was to be separated from the people anytime there was an issue of blood. And if it continued, the Bible specifically says she was to stay cut off until after it had stopped. Can you imagine, sisters, the risk of embarrassment and being called out that this woman endured as she came into a crowd of people where she was not supposed to be? Do you think that someone had had it 12 years? Maybe she traveled in from another country. Who knows? Doesn't say. But I don't think so. She might have been recognized as she came in to seek out Jesus. Horrible risk. I don't think we can really understand what she was risking. How great her faith was to take this leap, to even be in that crowd. And then, horror of horrors, to reach out and touch the clothes of a teacher. Could you imagine if she had done that to one of the rabbis or the priests? Her life might have been in danger. Do you think Jesus didn't know who touched him? I think he asked for our purpose and for those around him. And I think he asked so she could be completely healed. As I thought about that, she reached out and she felt immediate physical healing. But then he turned and says, "Daughter, thy faith has made thee whole. Go in peace." If I remember the words correctly. "And be whole of thy plague." Be whole. You're restored. You're cleansed. You're no longer cut off. You're washed. All your disease is taken care of, but so much more. Yet I know there's people here that have been fighting illness for years. And we've prayed about it, and you've prayed about it, and Jesus hasn't healed you. Maybe there's some that's dealing with demons. Maybe there's some dealing with despair. We don't understand why, do we? That's okay. The point is, we know he's able. And we know that sooner or later, we will be healed in one way or another. And we can look forward to that time. In the meantime, we know it's for our own good. Set free from the bondage of the law, just as he did for us. I don't think she even wanted to be seen. She just wanted to touch his garment and have this blood stop. But boy, she got more. It was interesting to see the disciples' reaction. You know, they've been with this man who calmed the storm and who has healed all these people and dealt with the demons. And now they're in a crowd and they're looking at him like he's a crazy man. What do you mean? Who touched you? I mean, that'd probably be my reaction. I tend to talk before I think. And, you know, what do you mean? What's wrong with you? But Jesus knew. And he wanted them to know as well. This woman probably just wanted to exit with a private faith. Was at a funeral of a neighbor that actually we when we started farming, when my dad started farming, we farmed his ground, bought his equipment from him. It's just kind of a crusty old character there. Went to school with his kids. Never heard of him attending church anywhere or expressing any sort of faith. But, you know, his funeral was held in the church, and the pastor had that job. And he dug out somewhere that way back when he had made a profession of faith, praise the Lord. And he said, well, Chuck had a private faith. He had a private faith. And he encouraged us not to have a private faith. And I've thought about that ever since. And I think that's what we want today. It's what Jesus wanted for this woman. He didn't want her to have a private faith, but to go and tell. And that's what we want to do after a weekend like this. We want to go and tell what great things God has done for us. We don't want a private faith. It's so easy to slink through life and be scared, but it's too short. Eternity's too long. There's nothing worth here than being ashamed of the name of Christ. Let's spread it and tell it. Notice again all the witnesses. There was multitudes in this case surrounding them. There was the disciples. There was a woman. There was Darius as he stood by. Ruler of the synagogue. Witness this. Well, one more. Christ is able over death. You may have dealt with disease, or you probably will if you haven't, and you may have dealt with demons, and you might, and you maybe have dealt with despair, or you might, but you have and you will deal with death. I know that. It's the reality of life. And you have recently, young, old. You know, it doesn't really matter, does it? Death comes so quick. Young people, the difference between when you die and I die is not even a fraction of a second in the time of eternity. Or someone that's 100 would hear today versus someone that's 1, it's not even a measurable cent in eternity. It has no meaning. Death is coming so quick. Life is but a vapor. It soon passes away. Like grass is cut down. We will deal with death. We will face death. Every one of us, in with our friends, our family, our loved ones, our fellowship, and us. And we don't, as humans, like to think about death. We just try to ignore death. We want to create somehow the illusion that we're going to live forever. Our minds are amazing how they can block that out. It's an amazing thing. But as you see this scene here, can you imagine poor Darius? He's the ruler of the synagogue. And can you again imagine the courage it took to go to Jesus as a ruler of a synagogue, of a synagogue of men that were very concerned about this wild card man from Nazareth? Can anything good come out of Nazareth? Who was speaking seemingly against everything they stood for. To go to this man in faith, desperate, because men had not been able to help my 12-year-old daughter. Can you imagine this, brethren? If you were in his position, going up to Jesus, you say, well, of course you go to Jesus. But put yourself in Darius's place. Think about that. What awesome faith he had. And then I don't know what Darius's personality is like, but I would have been rushing Jesus along. It's this way. We got to go. We got to hurry. And then this woman stops him, and I'd just be chomping at the bit. Hurry up. I mean, she can wait. My daughter's about to die. I mean, we can deal with her later. Let's prioritize. Let's talk about critical path. Let's think about what's more important here. My daughter's only 12. This woman's dealt with this for 12 years. She'll be fine another 12 minutes. Let's keep going. And yet immediately when this woman's situation's cleared up, men come and they say, don't bother him anymore. What was you going to him? If I read between the lines, it said, well, what did you go into him for anyway? Shame on you. Now come on back to your people. Let's leave this man alone to go his own way. Your daughter's dead. They didn't break it to him easy. They said, he's dead. Abrupt. Fathers, what would that feel like? And I think it's so inspiring, Jesus' reaction. He spoke before Jairus could even react. He says, fear not, only believe. Fear not, just believe. See, Jairus had already reached out to him. And Jesus was on his side. Death. He is risen. The crowds laughed Jesus to scorn as he said, she's just asleep. They knew she was dead. What's the difference between sleep and death to Jesus? What is the difference? It's nothing. He wasn't strained. It wasn't like some in the Old Testament where they laid and they prayed and they did and they struggled and it slowly come back to life. He just simply said, daughter, wake up. And he pulled her up. He reached out and touched her, pulled her up. He said, go ahead and eat something. It's no big deal. It's just like with Lazarus. He said, Lazarus, come forth. And I like to think about that. Because I think if he had just said, come forth, all the graves would have erupted. So he said, Lazarus, come forth. That valley of dry bones that Ezekiel tells us about, it's no big deal to bring him back to life. For the risen one. Daughter, wake up. I wonder what the laughing, mocking crowds thought then. This daughter came out alive. What do you think the 12-year-old daughter thought? I've been thinking about this, and I hope someone will come up and correct me if I'm wrong. But I can't think of a single instance when someone was raised from the dead that the Bible tells us their thoughts, their reaction to being lifted from the dead. It tells us of those around them, the joy as they receive their dead ones back to life. But it doesn't say anything about those that were dead. I met a man a couple months ago. It was an interesting story. He was he worked in a fire department at Bainbridge Island for a while and then in Seattle. And he had a lot of experiences. And one night they were called out for a call. And it was to a lady in her 80s, and she had, in essence, if I remember the story correctly, I'm a little fearful. I know there's a lot of medical people present. So I tried to get a hold of this guy to verify the time. But what sticks in my mind, he told me that her heart, or she had been unconscious, and when they got to her heart had stopped, or she, for all practical purposes, stopped her in AFib. It wasn't working correctly. And the time had been about 6 minutes. And he said it was a time that most of the time on older person, it's too long. They don't make it. But they got to her and they worked on her in the ambulance on the way to the hospital and she got a heartbeat again. And she came back to life. But if I remember correctly, she never regained conscience while they were with her in the ambulance. Next morning, they liked to visit their patients before they started their shift. And so him and the other two, medics went in and they went into this up to this lady's room to see her. She was awake then. And as they walked into the room, he said, and this man had been raised a Christian, but he wasn't a believer at that point. But he said, this woman, he could tell as soon as she entered, they entered the room, she was an angry woman. She was mad, and not only that, he didn't know why, but she was mad at them. She was angry. And he was struck by it. They started to talk to her, and she said, why did you bring me back? I was in such a wonderful place. Why? I was ready. My husband's gone. My loved ones are gone. I just wanted to go. Why did you bring me back to this place? Made Dean think. Name of my friend. And he soon after started walking and following Jesus. He knew he wouldn't have had that reaction if it had been him. Made me wonder. We want our loved ones back, especially when they die young. What would their reaction be if we took them from the presence of the Almighty? 118:6 says, "The Lord is on my side. I will not fear. What can man do unto me?" What can man do to me except kill me in an awful way? What can he do unto you? No, fear God, the one who can destroy your hell, your body and your soul in hell. It says, fear him. You know, I was thinking about that. Fear him who can bring you back to life, to face judgment. Judgment. We're all going to face it. Read Brother Lawrence's book for the first time. I don't know how I've ever not heard about him, but I'm sure many of you have read that. And it just, as he tried to dwell in the presence of the holy all the time and everything he did, he made this comment. He said, "I rest in peace knowing my judge." What a thought to think about as we face certainty of judgment, that we can just rest in peace knowing him as our judge, the one that will raise us up from death. And you know, as we walk away from judgment, as everyone walks away from judgment, everyone will be perfectly satisfied with the sentence. There won't any think that the judge got it wrong, whether they're sentenced to hell or to heaven or to wherever. They will know that's where they belong. I don't think that's possible on this earth, but it is there. Well, a few more things to ponder as we shortly take our seat. I already mentioned it. Jesus interceded with Jairus before he had time to react. Let's think about that. We notice the witnesses. And the other thing that I find interesting, and is this girl was 12 years old. Significant? I'm not sure. The woman had the disease for 12 years. We know that 12 is a significant number in the Bible, the 12 disciples, the 12 tribes, the 12 foundations, the 12 gates, and on and on and on. But it's interesting. All these accounts were given that we might know that he is the Son of God. And so don't read over. They're so easy to just read through these and, oh yeah, there's a man, he's a crazy man, and he had some demons, and the swine died, and see the picture. Dig into it a little bit. This encourages you to get the spiritual behind it. So, just to wrap up, have you experienced any of the D's in your life? Like we said in the beginning, D's aren't failing, they're just really close. I just want you to know as you leave this place, regardless of our situation, regardless of your situation, just remember, we found in despair, Jesus was able. We found that the demons, Jesus was able. And we found with disease that Jesus was able. And we found with death, Jesus was able. Doesn't sound quite right, does it? I think if we just take one word, that was, and we turn it to an is, we'll have it right. Jesus is able in all these situations. Lord bless you.